Succession number 27308, Reel 9.
Reel 9. You were just saying about the Lawford going off to investigate.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We were kept busy the whole of D-Day, obviously. Everything, we never had hands to dinner, we never fell out for anything. We worked from the time we got there, which was dawn, until sunset. We were working all day. Then we did a couple of patrols, but on the 8th, the Lawford was a senior officer. He went off to investigate some e-boats or something outside, and he was coming back early morning on the 8th, and as he came in to anchor near us, a plane came in and bombed him. It's difficult to know whether it was bombs or the sort of torpedoes, aerial torpedoes. Whatever it was hit him amidships. The ship broke in two and just sank in a few minutes with a loss of life, I think about 35. But Captain Pugsley, he was the CO, then came on to various other ships as headquarters ships, including the Kingsmill. We had him for a while as the headquarters ship. But the Lawford lasted those 2 days.
And what were your duties then? You said you did a little bit of patrolling, but what would that? What would that?
Oh yeah, there was activity going around, up and down, and on occasion, the occasions I got was they lowered us in the sea boat, and they said they'd give us a hammer and said right away you go and look for one man torpedoes, and we. We never actually saw them, but apparently the Germans had some sort of a one-man torpedo that had a sort of plastic head, a bulb over its head. He sat on there and he directed the torpedo to the ship, and then if he was quick enough, he jumped off, and that was it. But what we were told is go out and have a good old patrol, and if you see any of these, go up to them and smash their dome. Put the hammer through it, they've had it. And then there was also other things. There was. They said also they got a habit of sending out boats loaded with explosives in the bows, and they fire them straight at the ship and then jump off them and look out for anything like that. We did that for a while, and as I said, that was it. It was, for our point of view, it was activity had lowered and we were all right. The army were doing their stuff ashore. As I said, the Lawford had gone and we did this sort of stuff.
Would you be bombarding the shore at all for the any period during that week after, say, D-Day?
No. Once the invasion was over, in fact... I got quite a surprise because we that was wartime. We'd seen the whack of it. And about 3 or 4 days after, it was pretty quiet, reasonably. And we got a pipe came over the ship, leave to 14 or so sailors for a couple hours, or 4 hours in the afternoon. Well, that was from 12 till 4. And I got in on that. I thought, oh, I'll go over there. I landed this on Gold Beach in the 12 o'clock there, you know, and they collected us at 1600. Said, right, there you are. You're on leave. Make sure you're back here by 1600 or you've had it. You know, you're adrift. So I went. I thought, oh, I'm going over and have a look at this and see what's happened. So they put us ashore on the island. We were in rig. We were in shore-going rig, you know, all dressed up. Anyway, I went up Gold Beach and we had to climb a sort of a bank at the back. I went up this bank. It was all torn down where the tanks and that had gone up, so it was a piece of tail. I suppose at one time it was all trees and that, but I got through it and I got up top and onto a road at the top. And looking there, it looked just like Britain. It was all open country, lovely bright sunshine in June, you know. It was just lovely. And I didn't know I was up there in this road. I thought, no, right or left, I don't know. If I'd have gone left, I'd have gone down into Aramanches. But I didn't. I went right. I thought, I'd go down here. Right, you know. So I turned right, and I'm walking along on the birds, on the old grass birds here, nice grass birds. I'm walking along for quite a while, a few hundred yards, I suppose. And then I sees a couple of pongos. Well, to be polite, they were young army gentlemen, you know. And there they were with their, they were waving their hands like they was trying to semaphore me. Going like this, you know. And I thought, oh, there, what's up with them? Anyway, I got up. Eventually, I got up. And they looked at me for a long while and they said, who the hell are you? Dressed up like a fairy? Who the hell do you think you are? I said, I'm on leave. I said, I've come ashore from the headquarters ship that looked after you people. I've come ashore to have a look round for myself and see what you've been up to. They said, well, you're bloody lucky then, Jack, because where you were walking is mined. He said, there's mines along there. So don't get back on that side again. Where do you think you're going? And I said, I don't know. I'm going to have a look around and I've got to be back on the ship at 4 o'clock. All right. Go on then. After they'd gone through all my identity and all that lot. Okay then, but keep off the verges and on you go. So I went on a bit further and I wanted a little job of nature and I looked down, there was trees, lovely avenue of trees. I thought I'd go down there. I went down there, about 200 yards, a nice grassy ditch one side. I went there and there was a tinkling sound. I thought, oh, that's funny. Went the other side, another tinkling sound. So I finished the job, and then I looked round, got a stick, and I had to poke around. In the first ditch, there was a load of mines, about 18 or so inches across. And then I went the other side, more mines there, but also a nice little something glistening. I grabbed it up, and it was a... There was a load of German hand grenades. And they were all lovely and chrome. Chromium plated. With a handle on. Little wooden handle. And I thought, ooh, they're not like ours, all the old green ones. So I thought, I'll have one of them for a keepsake. Now, when I get back on board, I'll empty it. And keep it as a keepsake. So I stuffed it down my sailor's jumper. Got back on the road. And I'm ambling along there, and I hear a motorbike coming eventually, come charging up behind me, and this army bloke pulled up, dispatch rider, old Royal Enfield, 350 Royal Enfield, girder forks and girder carrier, iron, and he says, where are you off to, Jack? I heard you're up here. I said, oh, I don't know. I said, I'm just going up and have a look around. He said, all right, he said, I'm going into Bayer with messages. He said, so if you want, I'll give you a lift into Bayer. I said, well, that sounds all right to me. Yeah, so I jumped on the back, on the old girder frame, and off we hammered away up this road until we'd gone so far. And I thought, well, what about that old grenade down there? If he should go off now, it could do me a bit of damage. So I thought, nah, I'll get rid of that. I reached in and I chucked it over the hedge as we went along. So he goes in. We're coming into Bayer and he pokes his head over his shoulder. He says, keep your head down here, Jack, because there's snipers here still. I said, oh, thanks. I said, you better let me off then. He said, no, I can't do that. Hold on. And we went on in until we came to a big building that had pillars outside, and it was obviously a town hall. He said, I'm going in here, so you come with me and keep behind these pillars out the way. I said, okay. He went in, delivered his signals, and come out again. He said, well, we're all right. Jump on. We got out okay, and he dropped me right back on Gold Beach. I had about an hour to spare when I got back, so I was able to sit back and hang around on Gold Beach until I went back on the ship. So that was my experience of D-Day, which started off with all the bangs and shudders and bullets and whatever, bombs and whatever after, and clued up with a run ashore in the country, in the Bayeux in France.
When you were off the beaches near Arromanches, did you see the Mulberry Harbour at all while you were there?
Oh yeah, they had that there the first. Well, they had that there. It came up. We saw great things, but we didn't have took much notice of that. I had other things to think about, and all we thought were there were block ships or something that they were going to, you know, blocked to stop it. Anyway, oh yeah, they were coming. They came over after, more or less after us, obviously. But anything we saw like that, we assumed were block ships.
Were you surprised when it actually appeared to be a floating harbour?
Oh yeah, when they started getting it all done and that, when they got it all over. Mind you, we had some roughers that didn't do any good, but it upset them a bit. They still got through it, okay. Yeah, we had a. It was interesting. You had the odd planes come over. We got a Messerschmitt 88. We shot down one of them on a raid. And we had the old chasing around after human torpedoes and that, only for about, I think, a couple of weeks. And then we came back to Portsmouth. And I left her then. Anyhow, I went into barracks.
Do you remember when you were first drafted there? Do you think you were specially drafted to that ship?
Where?
When you were drafted over to the US to pick up the King's Mill.
No, I don't know about that. Whether they wanted so many Aztec ratings, I don't know. Or quite what, whether I was brought back from North Africa, I don't know. Or whether it was just a fluke that they sent a matlow all the way there with a bag and hammock to relieve me off a seagoing minesweeper to come back and do a horror submarine detecting course. I don't know. But anyway, that's how it ended up.
So what happened when you left the King's Mill? Where did you go to? Where were you drafted to next?
I haven't got a clue, to tell you the truth. Not without looking it up. I don't know. I came back there. Probably got a couple of days. What year would that be?
44.
Oh, I don't know. I got various ships after that. I know. At the end of 45, at the end of the war, I was on HMS Brissenden, another destroyer. And then the war was finished. And that was it.
So what was your first drafting after the war finished, then?
After the war finished, I was on, actually, when the war finished, I was on HMS Brissenden. Which was cruising around Portsmouth, based in Portsmouth. I'll have to go on to this. I was on Brissenden then for a while. Then on the Brissenden, I picked up my PO's rate. I was already passed for a petty officer, and on there I was rated petty officer. So,
what's the difference with that? When you're passing and you're rating, is it do you not automatically have the minute you pass out for it? Is that you don't automatically become that, or is it a different, longer process?
No. First of all, you pass for a higher rate. In other words, if you were an AB, you went to a leading seaman, you had to pass the test for leading seaman. That would be boat work and seamanship, all that. When you passed, it was recorded on your service paper, pass for able or leading seaman. The others you didn't pass for, ordinary seaman or boy, ordinary seaman, AB, you came up automatically. But then if you wanted to go further, you could be an AB until you came out if you wanted. If you want, you put in requests for higher rate. So you pass for leading seaman, you then go on the list and wait your turn for leading seaman. And that is done by drafting office. They send to the ship or wherever, rate up so-and-so leading seaman. And then from then on, you go on up. The next one is petty officer. And if you put in for that, you then do a test, seamanship and all that, and you pass for PO. When it comes to your rated up for PO, you're not rated PO, you're rated acting PO. Now, this means you remain in the sailor's uniform until such times as you're actually rated PO. So you do 9 months trial period as an acting PO in sailor's rig, you know, and then when it comes up to be rated PO, you come in front of the captain, and if you're recommended, you're rated. If you're not, then you don't get rated, and you remain as you are. So really, it's a process of passing for a higher rate and then waiting till your turn comes to be rated up. Unless in some circumstances you can get advance rate. Like I had a couple. One where I was a PO and I was offered a foreign draft on a ship abroad, as opposed to the nice shore job I had in Aberdeen, up in Dundee. And I had that for 18 months as a shore job instructing on the old Trincomalee, or the older, one of the oldest ships in the fleet. I was a seaman instructor on there with 18 months to do. But halfway through, I was sent for and said, there's a draft here for you, unaccompanied, to Bahrain in the Middle East, or Far East, you know, Middle East. Bahrain. I said, well, something's wrong there. He said, yeah, I know. He said, you're only halfway through your shore job. But this job means that you would go to Bahrain and join the tank landing ship HMS Anzio as the chief bosun's mate. So that meant I would go to there, be rated up chief bosun mate, and I would jump the queue, rather, for so obviously I took that. Other than that, that's it. I was, at the end of the war, I was rated up on the Brissenden when we were working around Portsmouth. And shortly after I was rated up, I was sent to Collingwood, HMS Collingwood, Fareham, shore base. I was sent there as a PO, and I was on Petty Officer Gate. In other words, guard on the gate at Collingwood. I don't think they have it now, or they do. They have an armed guard or whatever at the back gate. I don't know about the front. But certainly in my day, we used to have a PO on the gate for checking in and out and saluting senior officers, all that lot coming in and out, you know, maintaining the gate. I was on that for about a month or a couple of months. And then I was then acting PO, and then the captain decided that he didn't want an acting PO on the gate. So after about 3 months, I was made up to PO instead of waiting the 9 months. I was made up to a petty officer of the main gate in Collingwood at Fareham.
How at this time, because obviously you'd signed on with your original terms and conditions in way back in 1938, and obviously there's a desertion period. The war's come to an end, and what's your situation? Are you going to stay in the Navy, or have you decided at that point?
Well, Dave, this is a good point, because I had several occasions. I'm going to jump a bit, because you've asked that question, I'm going to answer it. First of all, when I joined the Navy, when I come back, I didn't get in as a boy from Royal Hospital School. If I had it done, I'd have gone in for 12 years. When I came back in, I signed on for a new thing, which was 7 years and five. So that was short service. 7 years with the RN, 5 years with the reserve after you'd gone out, which was different from a straight 12 years. So I signed on as a short service boy at HMS Walpole, Sheerness, for 7 and 5. During that time, of course, the war was in full swing, so forget the 5 years reserve, carry on, and I did the 12. And then around the end of the war, I think I was in Collingwood, I was a PO, and all the time, unsure whether to sign on or stay put. So I came up with a bright idea of offering 3 years extended service. So I promptly smacked in for 3 years. So that gave me another 3 years to think it over, you see. I lasted a year or so in Collingwood. I went off the gate after a while and I went as buffer of the top camp. In those days, you had Collingwood, it was two camps. There was a bottom camp and a top camp, and then there was the wren's quarters at the top, on the top camp. And I went as buffer of that for a while.
What's buffer?
It's a backer up of the chief or PO in charge of, you know, giving, maintaining work, daily work and all, everything, upper deck routine. And then you've got a chief and they poke a PO in as his buffers, you know. So I went, I was done that for a short while, only a couple of months or so. And then I got a draft down to Hornet at Gosport, which was the MTB base. We had a dozen or so MTBs down there, fast motor torpedo boats, very interesting. I went to one of them, which was MTB 5003. I went to her as the coxswain. Now, the crew on there was the captain, who was usually the CO, was the lieutenant. The coxswain was a PO, and then you had about eight or nine crew leading seamen ABs or whatever. And we used to go out fast. They were very fast exercises around the Isle of Wight and all that, just daytime stuff. And then I was on that for a while. That was MTBs. I did have another one while I was there, 909, but only a short while. And then it was, from there, it was to HMS Siskin. Now, what happened there in the meantime was I was a PO and I was advised that my non-sub rate was no longer applicable and I should put in for something else. As a PO, I put in for Fleet Air Arm as aircraft handler. A PO aircraft handler, that meant you were on carriers or shore bases, one of the two, either shore bases or carriers, and you were handling aircraft on the upper deck, on carriers. You were on the upper deck, parking aircraft, unparking them, all sorts of upper deck stuff when they're landing and all that lot. PO aircraft handler, so I'd have been in charge of a few more. Anyway, that started me off. I then went to Siskin, which was then Salton is now, but it was Siskin in 1945, I think that was. No, it was 1947, so a couple of years after the war. I decided, I put in for and was granted to go through for PO Air, aircraft handler. PO Air, aircraft handler, that was AH, you know. I started off at Siskin.
Could I ask you with that, is there anything that you had to learn about, obviously, parking or placing the aircraft or anything? Did you go on a course for
that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that Siskin was the start of it. So in those days, Siskin, which is now Salton, was an airfield. It was it was a big grass airfield. It was fields that had runways, or you landed on the fields. It was a grass airfield. And that was the start of my training for aircraft handler. I went there, they had a dummy flight deck of concrete over on one of the fields. And it was just like an aircraft carrier's flight deck, only it was on the ground, it was concrete. Now we would go, classes would go onto that in the morning, and we would practice moving aircraft by the proper signals, moving them, we'd have aircraft to do it with, moving them, parking them, and all sorts of other things like that at Siskin, you know. And I did that, and then I went to Daedalus to finish off. Daedalus being the bigger place, did a whack there on bit of flying and that, just to get, you know, to know what was what. We used to take off, go over the Solent, you know, and cruise around over there, come in.
What were you flying in? What type of aircraft were you flying in?
Well, there were, in those days, there were one great selection there. I flew a couple of times in one of the old Dominies, a string bag, as they called them, biplane. They were, I was wicked. I had a trip from up north, from Scotland to Daedalus in one of them, and it used to drop and all sorts of funny things there. And then when I left, I had a trip from Daedalus up to Scotland in a Dove, which was a lovely six or seven seater, quite a nice plane. But our main job was dealing with crashes, and you see, because on all the airfields, and same with civilians, the aircraft don't take off unless there's a full crash crew near the control tower, and you have a couple of crash tenders, that big Fords and trucks. A CO2 gas tender. I'm talking about my day. It may be different now. You had a big tender, which I used to have at Dulles Airport in Aberdeen. But it was a huge truck or lorry with a double bank of CO2 gas cylinders on the rear end. And then you'd have an ambulance, a fully staffed ambulance. And you'd have all those emergency vehicles at the control tower or near the crash crew's quarters, which was near the tower, and they had to be closed up before flying could take place. You had to have them fully manned. We had to learn all the details of the crash tender crew. And then I went through that course. Eventually, I passed out as an aircraft handler, PO Air, aircraft handler.
You know, when you were dealing with the crashes, did you have any protective clothing for, say, if you were dealing with fires or something like that?
Oh, yeah, you had your protective asbestos stuff and that, and you'd be in them all the time you were closed up. I'll go on from there. I passed out, I was aircraft handler. I was a PO aircraft handler, passed out, and air. So I was waiting then for a draft. Where was I going? A new job, a new rating. No longer seaman, but airman, PO Air. And up came my draft, which was HMS Condor at Arbroath in Scotland. Now, that was a big airfield, an RN airfield up in Scotland, HMS Condor. I was about 2 years up there or so. I went up to Condor in Scotland, Arbroath, and the crash crews, I had a crash crew, which could be doubled, you know, I had some off and some on, because when we were flying, we were near, my fire station was beside the main gate, and it was also near the airfield, so I was in the fire station itself. We also had civilian fire tenders up there. And I was, all I had to do was when we were flying, I had to have a crash crew available on the airfield, ready for any incidents. That was it. I mean, you did get your incidents. You'd get, planes would come in and they'd signal that they were in difficulties or something. Well, then they were directed, if they were able to fly around and use up their fuel, and then to crash land, and we used to go in and deal with it, you know.